Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comics Horse Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
This is John Paul.
And this is another X Tuesday episode. And we're actually going to be releasing this one on the same day we release the House of X number three, issue number three episode, just because these two issues go together so well that we didn't want to release one without the other. As soon as we talk about three, we automatically want to pick up four. And we talked about it during the last episode about how that's probably the reason that Marvel changed the release order, the reading order around, to say, okay, read Powers of 10, number two, then read Powers of 10, number three. That way you can then say, read House of X, number three, and House of X, number four, back to back, so you don't lose any momentum for the narrative. So we know in issue three, we saw Cyclops take his team of mutants that knew the risks and knew the stakes all the way out to the mother mold platform that was orbiting the sun, very close proximity to the sun, with all the risks inherent, you know, being so far away from home, being out in space, being in that close proximity to the sun. And so on the cover of this one, we see those mutants fighting as best they can against, I guess, members of Orcus. We don't really see these, you know, these guys in this sort of armor, at least not to this point. We haven't seen them. So Jean Grey, Cyclops, Husk, Nightwing, Monet, Wolverine. And I thought, is that everybody? I thought there was one more.
You said Nightwing.
Nightcrawler. Yeah. Archangel's not, that's who's missing, right? We don't see Archangel on the cover. So,
right. No.
Yeah. But anyway, we turn the page and the quote this time that leads off the story just says no more. And that's by Professor X. And obviously that's kind of the whole point of the whole mutant nation, the whole Powers of 10, House of X, Dawn of X, the whole reason for what they're doing, the whole reason that Moira has, you know, lived these different lives and learned all she has and finally gotten Charles Xavier and Magneto to work together. Like, no more, like, enough of mutants being subjugated and enough of mutants putting their own survival secondary to the survival of the human race. They're just not going to do it anymore. No more. So just like the previous issue, we get the quote page and then immediately we get the credits. That way we don't have that credit page interrupting the flow of the issue. So Jonathan Hickman, writer, Pepe Larraz as artist, Marte Garcia on colors, Clayton Cowell on letters, Tom Muller, the designer. So before we even get into the meat of the issue and start talking about the events that are going on out there close to the sun at this Orcus space station, we first talk about, look what they've done, it says, this first text page. Mutant extinction events. And this is what I mentioned it on the last episode. We talked about House of X number three. When you really look at the numbers, you cannot blame the mutants for doing what they're doing, even to the point of saying, no, human laws don't apply to us anymore. Not even to the worst of us, not even to Sabretooth. You know, we will police our own. We're tired of it. We're done. And when you look at these numbers, you can start to see why they'd feel that way. So the first mutant extinction event that's listed is Genosha. And that the cause of that, if you will, is credited to Sentinels, Bolivar Trask, and the Mamundry genocide. 16.5 million mutants dead in the Genoshan mutant extinction event. Below that, the next largest in terms of how many mutants died is Decimation. And that's the mutant erasure by the pretender Wanda Maximoff. So that's the whole House of M, which has been kind of on people's minds lately with the, WandaVision, I guess, TV show that's been going on. Have you been watching that, John Paul?
Of course.
Okay, just curious. It seems to have divided the internet. People that watch it and love it, and people that have watched it and don't get it and have completely bailed. There is no third option. But really, there is, because then there's people like me who haven't watched a single second, don't really care. But for the most part, when I see comic book people talking on social media, they fall into one of those two camps. I tried to watch it. It bored me. I don't get it, whatever. And then the other part that are like, I can't wait for the next issue, you know, inject it directly into my eyeballs, whatever. So interesting. But anyway, because that's Scarlet Witch and because the House of M, Decimation, Mutant Erasure was all about Scarlet Witch, that's listed here as well. It's so interesting too. Obviously, Wanda wasn't herself when that happened, when she said no more mutants. But I don't know. I don't feel like mutants still hold, you know, it's not held against her. She's not considered this, you know, evil,
like, man.
Well, she's not considered like an antagonist. Like the mutants aren't, X-Men aren't out there going, we need to go and wipe her out. She's been forgiven for it to some extent, as opposed to.
Keep reading on. You might not believe so.
Might not. Okay. I'm just saying that the animosity level isn't like the way they look at Bolivar Trask
Definitely not.
Yeah. And some of these others that I'm about to mention that have committed major mutant crimes. Like she's not to that level, which I find interesting because when you look at the numbers, I mean, and maybe it's because she didn't kill anybody. You know, she said no more mutants and it erased their powers, but it didn't actually kill them. So that might be the difference.
Yeah.
So in addition to these two mutant extinction level events that are listed, we also see recent history has seen an uptick in incidents of human on mutant crime. The increased number of mutant births since the lights has only served to provide more of an opportunity because there's no more mutants for human on mutant hate crimes to be enacted. So they've listed the ones that are the most, you know, the highest numbers, I guess. So we have Stephen Lang during Project Armageddon, 29 dead. Mr. Clean, affiliated with the Church of Humanity, 126 dead. Graydon Creed, Friends of Humanity, 147. Cameron Hodge, of the Right, 178. The Leper Queen of the Sapien League, 220. And again, these aren't all deaths. These are the number of mutants affected. Although most of them are deaths. Donald Pierce, Reavers, 348. William Stryker, Purifiers, 414. Wanda Maximoff of the Avengers, 986,420. So that's how many mutants got depowered when she said no more mutants. So again, she's listed here, but you know, they weren't all deaths. So maybe that's why she isn't as hated as a lot of the other people on the list. And then of course, the number one, we mentioned it up there, Genosha, the genocide when the Sentinels were sent into the mutant nation of Genosha and tasked with, you know, killing everybody. So Bolivar Trask Sentinels, 16,521,618. So below that we have the mutant population of Earth and we start looking at the numbers before these terrible things happened. So before Genosha happened, you had 17,508,236 mutants. And when you looked at the total population of Earth, how much of a percentage were mutants of that population? It's a very small amount. It's 0.0025%. So, you know, a very, very small fraction of the actual population of Earth were mutants. And then after Genosha, before Decimation, after 16.5 million mutants have been lost, killed in Genosha, the remaining mutant population dropped from 0.0025 to 0.00014%. So, you know, that's a huge amount, right? You're limited even more. You're cutting it by like way more than half. It's minuscule almost. And then after Decimation, when you go from 986,618 remaining mutants, you go down to 198 when Scarlet Witch said no more mutants. Now, again, she didn't kill them, but they were no longer mutants. You had 986,000 plus mutants who no longer were mutants. They were just regular humans. And when you put that in terms of percentage for the total population of Earth, the remaining mutant population was only 0.00000029%. So, I mean, they have gone from 17 million 17.5 million mutants to 198. Like, you cannot blame the mutants for wanting to form their own nation, for doing whatever they can to try to survive. Any species would do that. They would do whatever it takes. They'd probably do something that was a lot more extreme than what Charles and Magneto are trying to do. You know, the caveat there being maybe they don't necessarily have the foresight to know what's going to work and what is not going to work, because they don't have somebody they can count among their number who has lived a bunch of lives and tried a bunch of different things. But I had never, I mean, obviously I knew about this stuff. I knew about Genosha and I knew about House of M and the whole No More Mutants, but I never sat down and looked at the actual numbers of it. I don't know that it's ever been presented this way, but I mean, that is stark right there. Like, if this was any, even if it was a species like, I don't know, sea turtles or something, we as humans would be like, oh, they're now an endangered species. We're down from millions of sea turtles to less than 200. We have to protect them. We have to prevent them from going extinct. And I won't pretend to understand extinction events and evolution in terms of, you know, why things go extinct and what the value is of keeping certain animals alive or not. I mean, I think we want a diverse biosphere, because I think that leads to a healthier planet overall. But again, I don't know the science behind it. It's not my thing. But the fact that there are people who dedicate their lives to helping out endangered species, I think there's value in that, and that's noble and it's great work. And then you flip that around on its head, and here we are talking about mutants who've gone from 17.5 million to less than 200. And are there humans trying to keep them alive? No. In fact, there are still humans that are building satellites around the sun to create more death and destruction machines to go and kill what remaining mutants are left. I mean, when you stop and think about it, it's pretty awful. Even the humans who realize, and Captain America would be a perfect example. And the reason I use him is because on some recent X Tuesday episodes, the ones where we've been covering the Matthew Rosenberg Uncanny X-Men run, you know, Captain America shows up to talk to Cyclops and Wolverine, and he tells them, hey Scott, hey Logan, you know, I feel you. I understand what you're going through, and I won't substitute my judgment for yours, but you guys need to be careful. You need to watch what you're doing. You need to not be keeping prisoners in the basement of a bar. Like, even Captain America, like this guy who's all about, you know, freedom and individuality and protecting people, even he is not actively trying to help them. Like, I don't know, it'd be curious to sit Captain America down, if you're a real person, and show him these numbers and go, dude, why aren't you doing more to protect mutants? Instead, we got the Avengers and X-Men fighting all the time. Maybe blame that on Marvel as a publishing entity, because it sells comics. So I don't know. What are your thoughts about these numbers, Jean-Paul? I mean, it's pretty striking when you stare at it straight and head on.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about it from a numbers perspective, because it was never presented. And I honestly didn't think they ever would. But knowing Jonathan Hickman, he's very precise and deliberate with what he does. And it puts it in perspective. If you don't have very many mutants left, of course you're going to protect what you've got. And by any means necessary. Like you said, I wouldn't blame them if they were just a little bit more extreme, but they're still kind of a bit of the old Charles Xavier dream within there a little bit, but no more dealing with all the crap they've already dealt with. So
yeah, and you know, the only number of these that I had seen before was the 198. Because that was established, I think, right away after Scarlet Witch said no more mutants. But I never realized how many, like, in canon they had said there were. And I have to admit, like, thinking at it purely from the standpoint of a comic fan, when I heard that, okay, they decided to do no more mutants, a lot of it was, well, Marvel feels there are too many mutants. And it kind of, when you get a bunch of them, then it makes them all as a whole less special, right? So you want to keep it limited and easier to keep track if it's you know, less than 200, and I was like, oh, that makes sense. That, you know, I think that's a good thing from the you know standpoint of a fan and a reader, you know, I maybe can remember 200 mutants. I can know who they all are. I can know what their powers are. It's a lot easier. You start talking about 17 million mutants, 17 and a half million mutants. There's no way. It's not humanly possible for somebody to remember all those. You're not going to tell stories about 17 and a half million. But that's just thinking about it in terms of, you know, okay, this isn't real. This is, you know, a fake universe and whatever. And you just think of it from that perspective. But when you want to bring in the political aspects of it and tell a good story, you throw these numbers up, then yeah, it's pretty stark. And you're right. Like, you wouldn't, I don't know that anybody could blame them if they were being even more militant and being more extreme, to use John Paul's word, to try to save their species. So, when we get into the actual story, we turn the page, we see Magneto and Professor X, and they're walking into the Krakoa kind of observation area that's been created to sort of monitor the mission that's happening out there at the sun. Professor X asks if they're ready, and Hank McCoy B says, yes, we've got Trinary. She's pulling all the observable data from human resources. So they've got some radio telescopes, they've got a solar observatory, and they're, you know, training all these resources out toward the sun to try to pull in the information, but it's a long way. So even with all that, there's going to be an 8-minute delay because it takes that long for light to travel that far. And so Beast is saying, yeah, we fortunately have someone on hand who can extrapolate that data into, you know, an actionable forecast of what's happening and keep it a little more real time. So we see Storm is there, as well as Beast and Trinary. And basically what they're going to do is they're going to kind of make this hive mind, so to speak. So Charles kind of explains it. He says, okay, so we're all going to be in communion. All 8 of us are going to act as one. The cuckoos are binding them all together. So there's a cuckoo for Storm. There's a cuckoo for Trinary. There's a cuckoo for Beast. And Magneto's teamed up with Professor X. So he's acting as that conduit, if you will. And so each of them has kind of a role to play. So Charles' role is to allow them to all communicate together. Beast's role is for observation. Trinary's is analysis, and Storm is invocation. So, okay, you know, what should we do next kind of thing? What is actually happening? So they go ahead and create the link, and who they're linking up with is Jean Grey. So once they link, we see Jean's face sort of manifested there, and she screams out right away, Professor, Professor's like, Jean, what's wrong? The anguish in your mind, the pain. Should we fear the worst? Like, have you already failed? And we can see on the ship that Jean Grey is actually using Monet to help her boost her powers. And she's like, no, we haven't lost, but it's bad. Archangel and Husk are dead. So maybe that's why we don't see Archangel on the cover. So they died in the explosion that Erasmus set off last issue. So right away, before they even got a chance to get inside, Nightcrawler's hurt. He's got some kind of internal injury. Logan is, to use Jean Grey's words, not himself. And when we see Logan, he's like holding his arm or holding his hand and his wrist and trying to let his like rest of his arm kind of rebuild itself, regrow itself, because he's pretty much missing everything except the bone from his shoulder down to like almost all the way down to the wrist. So he obviously was hurt pretty bad as well. So Jean's like, we underestimated these people's resolve and it cost us. And I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say that. Certainly they underestimated Erasmus's resolve, but certainly his wife, Dr. Gregor, she even was like, whoa, I can't believe that he killed himself to try to stop these mutants from keeping the mother mold from coming online. So, you know, the question, the most important question, despite all the injuries and everybody being hurt and some even dead, the real question is, can you complete the mission? Which is what Professor X asks. And Jean, you know, I don't know, but Cyclops is undeterred. He's like, yes, we have to finish it or this was for nothing, which I love the, we've talked about it several times now, the characterization of Cyclops by Hickman, giving him that swagger, right? Like he knows and knew right from the start that this could be a one-way mission, but the stakes were so high that they had to complete it. So even now, with the setback that they have experienced, He's no, we're going to finish it because we have to. Otherwise it is for nothing. And mutants are going to cease to exist. So they're going to finish it no matter what. And then we see Logan, and it's kind of a gross panel there where we see his skin and muscles continuing to knit together. And he's obviously in pain because he's like, he's right. And he kind of grunts. He's like, we finish this because if we don't, they'll finish us. Right. Because again, remember, if this mother mold comes online, that means the beginning of Nimrod, the beginning of Nimrod's origins, which is the, you know, ultra uber level sentinel that eventually leads to mutants extinctions. And that's what they have to prevent from happening. So Wolverine even says, don't kid yourself, Red, we're playing for blood, which kind of ties back into what Wolverine had said all along. Like, remember, Jean was the one last issue who was saying, well, what about the civilians? You know, she was talking to Cyclops saying, what, we can't hurt the civilians. They're just scientists who are afraid of the future. And Wolverine was like, hey man, they chose a side. Like, no, like this is for blood. So I love that even now it's playing out. And I kind of don't understand why Hickman is using Jean as that, I don't want to say voice of reason, but the one that's hesitant. Because usually we've seen in the past where Jean would be more in line with Wolverine's thinking of, hey, you know, maybe we have to be a little more extreme. And Cyclops was always the one saying, no, we got to protect the humans. You know, got to find a way to live peacefully. So I'm not sure why he chooses Jean to be that voice. I mean, I guess if we're talking about how Hickman has sort of subtly altered the characterization of Cyclops to give him a little more swagger, but I don't know. Why don't you have like Nightcrawler, you know, cause he's so religious and, you know, Catholic, all life is sacred, that kind of thing. He would make more sense to me to be the one that might have a little reservation about killing humans and that kind of thing. I don't know. What do you think, John Paul?
I think maybe he could be playing off of the characterization from X-Men Red. Maybe, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, it is true. I mean, a lot of what I'm basing this Jean and Wolverine being of a like-mindedness is, you know, from much further back. I have to admit that I didn't read much of Jean once she came back most recently in the, was it the Phoenix Resurrection?
Yeah.
From Matthew Rosenberg. So in that X-Men Red title, I think it was written by Tom Taylor. She was a bit more, empathetic. Okay. Yeah. Good way to put it. Okay. Well, that makes sense then. I'm glad. See, this is why we have you here. resident X-Men expert, at least, you know, more so than myself. So anyway, Wolverine does say, hey, don't kid yourself, Red. We're playing for blood here. And said, okay, so we soldier on. And Cyclops is like, yeah, Nightcrawler, can you still do it? We know he has some internal injuries, but yeah, he's up for it. He says, don't worry about me. I'm fine. I'll get you guys where you need to go. So the plan is for Jean and Monet to stay on the Shi'ar ship to maintain the connection to Krakoa, because succeed or fail, the mutants back on Earth need to know what happens next. So the rest of them are going to go and be teleported in and try to release the control collar so that the mother mold will fall into the sun. So we see Nightcrawler teleport Cyclops in. We see him teleport Wolverine in. We see him teleport Mystique in. And they're each going to a different control collar. Wolverine takes the one nearest to the security hub where there may be the most guards because he's Wolverine, the best he is at what he does. Mystique is taking the one that's most close to the habitat where the scientists live because, you know, she can blend in. She can change her appearance, look like a regular, you know, scientist or what have you. And Kurt is taking one of the other two. Cyclops taking the last one. So he says, be safe, be strong, win. So meanwhile, Dr. Gregor is on her knees, still kind of in shock that her husband Erasmus has blown himself up. And the Omega Sentinel is imploring her, hey, get up. She's like, you have to get up. And she's like, why? She's just kind of lost it, you know, mourning her husband. He's saying, look, technically, I'm just an observer here, Dr. Gregor. I have no command authority. So if you just plan on sitting there crying over your husband, you'll be defeated. You're paralyzed by his loss. I can't actually order you to defend the station, but if you don't get up and do something, he will have died for nothing. And so that does actually get through to her, and she looks up at the Omega Sentinel with tears and mascara running down her face, kind of pulls herself together, calls the control room and says, hey, who's currently in charge of station security? So there's Captain Moore, who was second in command apparently to Erasmus, and he says, I have the wheel. And she says, okay, so what are you doing? He says, well, I'm here on the command deck and we're trying to coordinate fire teams and emergency staff. And she says, forget all that. Like, I'm at the habitat control collar for the mother mold, and you need to send teams to the other three because that's their real target. That's what they're going to try to do. They're going to try to release the control collars so that the mother mold falls into the sun. So Captain Moore responds, okay, understood. We'll reroute all the in-station teams. But I already did send some skiffs out to their ship, and they're getting ready to breach the mutant vessel now. So we know that that's not good for Jean Grey and Monet, who are there by themselves, that there's three teams ready to breach what's left of the Shi'ar shuttle. And so Captain Moore even says, should I have them stand down? Should I call them back? And she says, no, because we're going to need, and before anything can happen, before she can finish, there's a big noise, and we see that two of the control collars have already been released, and now there's only two arms of the station that are holding the mother mold head in place. So Omega Sentinel says, you want to know what that sound was? That was the sound of failure, Dr. Greger. The mutants have disengaged two of the control collars, and we see that it was Section 4 and Section 2. Section 4 being Wolverine as he's walking away from the control collar. We see a bunch of the Orcus guards just laying there, all decimated as blood drips off Wolverine's claws. And the second one, Section 2, being Nightcrawler, who only had to face two, just looks like scientists, who are still alive. All he did was tie him up as he runs off. So two down, two to go. Meanwhile, back in Krakoa, the mutants there can still see Jean's face, and she's giving them an update saying, we're halfway there, Professor. Wolverine and Nightcrawler are done, and they're moving, they're heading back. But the Sentinel drones are now more than halfway. Now, we know that the Sentinel drones were off near Mercury. The farthest point they ever are in their apex away from the station. So kind of played into the timing that the X-Men had of when they were going to attack. But it's been so long, things are taking longer than they initially thought they would. So now the Sentinel drones are going to be there soon. So it's another factor that the X-Men have to worry about. And in this panel, which is a really great panel, we see Jean Grey's face. It almost looks like it's made out of water or smoke or something. There's a big full-on thumbprint from either Marte Garcia, the colorist, or Pepe Larraz, the artist, which we've talked about before, where he likes to use his thumbprint or his fingers to do shading. So that one's pretty obvious. And I'll throw it
in the corner.
Yeah, I'll throw it up on the screen for those that see this on YouTube. You can see it here. I mean, you almost could create his thumbprint from that, or recognize his thumbprints from that. So hopefully he's not.
Yeah, like right there in the corner, right?
Yeah, hopefully he's not breaking in any houses, because your thumbprint's out there in the world, Pepe. So anyway, so they say, we think that Cyclops is close and Mystique is, and before she can finish that, Monet's like, we have to move. And that's when they realize, oh, we're being boarded. And Jean's like, what? No. So the connection's broken momentarily. So Monet shoves her into an escape pod, shoves Jean into an escape pod and says, okay, I'll cover your exit. And Jean's like, wait, you're not coming? And Monet says, well, no, they've got to find somebody in here. If they don't, then they're going to start searching everything. So, they knew somebody stayed behind. If they don't find anybody that stayed behind, they're going to start checking all the escape pods and they'll find you. So you got to stay in touch with the teams connected to Krakoa and I will hold them off. Well, Jean knows this is death sentence for Monet. She's like, the team's not the problem, because they're all safe relatively on the station, but at this distance and without you working in tandem with me, how am I even going to be able to communicate with them back on Earth? You need to come with me so we can stay in contact. And I love Monet's answer. She's like, I don't know what to say, Marvel girl, try harder. You know, like, she, again, willing to sacrifice herself for this mission. She knew what the stakes were. She knew the risks. She goes, we're out of options. So as the Orcus guards breach the ship and pull out their guns, we see Monet turn into her razor clawed, spiky haired red persona. And she says, my goodness, you've bitten off more than you can chew. And she wades into them. And probably if there were only, you know, maybe six or eight of them, she might have been okay. But she's outnumbered like, I don't know, 30 to one. So clear that she wasn't able to, or probably is not going to be able to survive that encounter. Meanwhile, back at the forge on the ship, Cyclops is at his control collar and manages to disengage it, which only leaves Mystique's, and he's trying to communicate with her, you know, telepathically through Jean. So Mystique, are you there? And she's, I don't know, she doesn't, Mystique, like, okay, first of all, why are you still in your Mystique form? Like, the whole reason they sent you to the one closest to the habitat is so you could disguise yourself as a scientist. So why did you not
about that?
Yeah, why did you not disguise yourself as a scientist? And she doesn't seem to particularly be in a hurry either. She's just kind of walking, going, hey, stop screaming in my head, Summers. I hear you. I got turned around a bit, but I'm here. And then she's like, hold on, something's happening. And because she's Mystique, instead of making herself look like a scientist, when Dr. Gregor and the Omega Sentinel see her, they are actually behind her. They're not in the room where the control collar is. They're on the other side of like the blast door. And Dr. Gregor basically hits the like the vacuum button that opens up that area, that control collar room to space, basically to the vacuum of space. So it's like that emergency purge atmosphere release or whatever that you always see in science fiction movies. And so as soon as Mystique sees her reaching for the button, she's like, no, okay, now Mystique's in a hurry. Okay, now you're in a hurry because, you know, she knows she's about to be blown into space. But again, it just doesn't explain why did you not disguise yourself as a scientist? I guess because then the story wouldn't work. I don't know, reasons, Hickman, whatever. But be that as it may, for whatever reason, maybe it's arrogance, the arrogance of Mystique. Gregor hits the button and Mystique is sucked out into space. She's dead. So Gregor then calls in to Captain Morris saying, okay, they disabled three of the support columns. There's one that's still engaged and I'm going to leave the room that it's in open to space. And hopefully the hard vacuum is going to keep them out long enough for me to bring Mother Mold online. And he's like, okay, good. Cause we eliminated the remaining opposition on their ship. And I'm sending all the other support teams to you. They're en route now. And the Omega Sentinel's like, what do you mean you're going to bring her online? And I don't know why that's not clear. Like, she says she's bringing her online. And Dr. Graven says, I'll give you one guess. And sure enough, she starts to bring it online. There's a countdown that starts 30 seconds. Mother Mold boot in 29 seconds. And the Omega Sentinel's like, it's too soon. You don't even know if this thing's going to be sane if it crossed that threshold that we were talking about in the last issue. And Dr. Gregor's like, well, I think it will be. And I won't let them stop us no matter what. So, again, we're getting back to the zealotry. You know, Erasmus was willing to blow himself up to keep the mutants from stopping Mother Mold to come online. And when you think about it, what Dr. Gregor was doing, and she didn't necessarily agree with what her husband did. You know, she was like, no, don't do this, blah, 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 whatever. What she's doing is arguably much more insane than what her husband did. Because at least Erasmus was only, he knew it, he was killing himself, right? Dr. Gregor has absolutely zero evidence that this Mother Mold is actually sane, is actually not at a lower level of AI intelligence where it'll come online and exterminate everything. Right. Not only am I going to exterminate mutants, I'm going to exterminate humans too. Because again, like we talked about last episode, where mutants theoretically come from humans. And if you want mutants not to exist, then just have humans not exist. And then there will be no more mutants. So Erasmus was risking himself. Dr. McGregor is risking the entire future of the human race. Which, when you stop and think about it, the whole reason Orcus exists is because they're scared that mutants are going to wipe out the human race. And now you're so arrogant and so scared and so terrified and so sure you know better than everybody else that you're going to do something that could theoretically lead to the end of the human race by trying to stop the end of the human race. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
Yeah. So really, really, it just doesn't make sense. But people like this exist, right? Like we've talked about before, they do things out of fear. They do things out of fear of the unknown. So when she says, she even admits, like the Omega Sentinel says, we don't even know if it's going to be sane. She doesn't say, well, I guarantee it will, or even I hope it will. She just says, oh, I think it will be. I think it will be sane. Like, wait, what? And I won't let them stop us no matter what. You know what it reminds me of? Did you happen to watch the Super Bowl this year, John Paul?
I watched some of it.
There was a commercial about, I think it was for a mortgage company. And in the commercial, they would ask the people, do you think we'll be approved? And they'd be like, oh, I'm pretty sure. And then they would show all these scenarios of people. And the people would ask questions. It was those same people that were asking, the same prospective home buyers asking, will I be approved for my home loan? Oh, we're pretty sure. And they'd be like, well, is that good enough, basically? And then they would have those same people, those same home buyers, and they'd be in other situations, like they'd be about to jump out of an airplane to go skydiving. And they would ask the jump master, is my parachute going to open? Is this a good parachute? I'm pretty sure. And it was a bunch of scenarios like that, you know, like, oh, I'm in a race car traveling 200 miles an hour. Do my brakes work? Pretty sure. These aren't things that you want to be pretty sure about.
You want to be certain.
Yes, exactly. You want to know 100% before you turn this mother mold on that it's going to be sane. Otherwise, what's the point? You've killed yourself. And if all you care about, Dr. McGregor, is your own survival, like we got to get mother mold online because we have to make sure the mutants don't stop us no matter what. Now you're not talking about the survival of the human race. You're talking about your own survival, which the whole point of Orcus is like, hey, we're sacrificing for the greater good because we want humans and humanity to survive and not be, you know, overwhelmed and taken over by mutants. You know, their crazy illogical zealotry. But when it gets to this point, it's like it's personal and you can see it. You can see it in her eyes. It's a great picture of her in that last panel on the page when she pulls out this AIM point-to-point translocator and the Omega Sentinel's like, oh, you mean to fight them? And she gets this look on her face. Yeah, of course I mean to fight them. It's all about revenge for her at this point. It's not about any noble idea, in my mind anyway, of her wanting to save the human race and bring the mother mold online to make sure Homo sapiens survive and Homo superior doesn't become the dominant species. This is just about wanting revenge for her husband. So in my mind, that's why she turns it on. And that's why she really doesn't care if it's going to be sane or not. I think it will be, but who knows? She's not certain. She doesn't know if the parachute's going to open. So meanwhile, and again, I guess reasons, like why would you have this station-wide message, mother mold boot in 22 seconds, but it does allow all the rest of the mutants to know, hey, what's going on? And so they'll hear it. They say, Jean, they've powered on mother mold. She relays that to the professor, which apparently she didn't need Monet as much as she thought. Maybe she's stretching herself to her limits. I mean, she does have a nosebleed in the panel. So maybe she is, you know, stressing herself to try to make sure she can communicate back to the mutants of Krakoa so they know what's going on. And she says, yeah, we're almost out of time. We failed to shut down the mother mold. It's coming online. You know, Mystique failed. So we don't know what to do. And Professor X's response is do whatever it takes. And so Jean says, well, did you get that, Scott? And Scott's like, yeah, of course. I mean, of course he's going to do whatever it takes. That was always the plan. So he's staring out at the mother mold, just hanging on by the one docking clamp. And he's trying to figure out what he can do. So he hears Wolverine in his head say, hey, Scott, we can get there. But there's kind of no other way. So what they decide to do is they're going to go at it directly from outside. They can't get to it from the inside. They might as well go from the outside. So Wolverine or Nightcrawler rather says to Wolverine, are you ready? And Wolverine says, yeah. So, I got to ask, because they know this is a one-way trip. Like, as much as you suspect that the whole mission was a one-way trip, they're about to teleport out into the vacuum of space. So this definitely is a one-way trip. So Wolverine asks Nightcrawler, you know, Nightcrawler being so religious, you think there's anything waiting for us on the other side? And Nightcrawler, with this great smirk on his face, you worried about your soul, Logan, finally, at this point? And Logan says, I'm just wondering what someone like me should expect. And I love Nightcrawler's answer. He puts his hand on Wolverine's shoulder and says, when you wake from this earthly slumber, my friend, look for me. I'll be waiting for you on the other side. And they disappear. They teleport out into space. So Wolverine is able to survive the rigors of space a little longer as his body starts to disintegrate. Nightcrawler pretty much just, you know, explodes from the inside out immediately. But as he's fallen apart, as Wolverine's body starts to fall apart, he's able with his claws to basically cut through the last of the clamps that's holding the mother mold into space. As the mother mold is starting to come online, it's not fully booted up yet, but it starts to speak. And it says, if man made me, then they are God and you are Titans, their spoiled lineage. But while you war, the children sit in judgment of those above us. We judge and we find you both wanting. So that answers the question right there of whether or not Mother Mold had gotten to a place where it would have allowed humans to live, but just taken out the mutants, right? So McGregor was wrong. It saw humans as God, you know, to them, you know, it's mutants are the creator of the Mother Mold. And the mutants are the Titans. They're what comes after humans, but spoiled in the words of the Mother Mold, like their spoiled lineage. And while the mutants and the humans war against each other, the children that have been created, again, you know, we've all heard that term, children of God, Mother Mold is saying the Sentinels or the machines or whatever you want to label it, Omega Sentinel, whatever is created, whatever comes from Mother Mold. Mother Mold creates Master Molds, which in turn create Sentinels. Everything that comes from that, you could all think of it as the children of God, right? The children of humanity, because the humans have turned on Mother Mold, have created Mother Mold. Everything that comes from that is the children. So while the children, the mutants and the humans war against each other, those children are going to sit in judgment. And the judgment of the Master Mold is that they find you both wanting. So that tells me that Dr. McGregor was completely wrong. The Mother Mold was not at a level of intelligence or at a level of you know, philosophically or whatever you want to call it, to not have wanted to destroy mutants and humans. Neither one, in the judgment of the children, in the judgment of Mother Mold, would have survived. So really, when you think about this, the sacrifice that this entire team of X-Men has made by going on this suicide mission to stop the Mother Mold from coming online, not only did it save mutants, it saved humanity as well. So if there was ever any doubt about whether or not McGregor was right or wrong, it is answered right there. We judge and find you both wanting, is what the Mother Mold says. But with his last kind of ounce of strength, like I said, Wolverine's able to cut through the last of the control arms, and the Mother Mold head goes falling into the sun. So it's definitely an action-packed issue. And an action-packed sequence, and as Scott watches this happen, he says, bravest man I ever knew. Jean, tell the professor it's done. It cost us our friends, our family, but it's done. And he says, I'm coming back for you now. So I don't know how they think the two of them are going to get back on a space escape pod. Maybe the remaining X-Men back in Krakoa can mount a comeback mission. So Jean tells him, yeah, I'm floating in this escape pod. And Cyclops says, okay, there's got to be an EVA suit in the hangar. I'll put it on. I'll jump out. Then I can use my optic blast to push us into an escape vector. And you're probably going to have to hold the pod together with your powers in order for that to work, for it to withstand the stress of, you know, being launched away from the gravity of the sun, but it should work. And Jean's like, so your plan is to drift back to Earth, you know, millions of light years with no food, no water. And Cyclops is like, it's a pretty terrible company, but it doesn't matter. I'm still getting you home. Like Cyclops is, you know, loves Jean, wants to get her home. And so she says, okay, hurry. But before he can get there, he's attacked by the Omega Sentinel. And Omega Sentinel says, well, the sensation you're feeling is an unhealthy dose of nanites coursing through your body. She hasn't chosen to kill Scott. She's chosen to inject him with the Sentinel technology, the Sentinel nanites that will turn Scott into an Omega Sentinel as well. And she even says that it won't kill you. Of course, you're too strong. But they're gathering at the base of your skull. They're preventing you from using your powers. And Scott's like, you know what? Doesn't matter because it's over. We destroyed the mother mold. We won, and capturing me means nothing. And McGregor's like, capture you? My husband's dead, and I'm not taking any prisoners today. So again, it wasn't about anything noble for McGregor. Once her husband, who you could make the argument did make a noble sacrifice to blow himself up to try to prevent the X-Men from stopping the mother mold from coming online, his sacrifice was noble, even if it was misguided. Her turning on mother mold, this just, you know, reinforces the idea that it wasn't about anything other than revenge. You know, she's not thinking about anything other than my husband's dead. She blames it on the mutants, and she's not taking any prisoners. And I don't even think that would change if she had known, if she'd heard what the master mold said, you know, that like when Wolverine was chopping through that last control arm and the mother mold said, yeah, you're both wanting, and she was wrong. Even if she found out she was wrong, she wouldn't care. She's just consumed with vengeance. That's all she cares about. So Scott reaches out with his mind one last time and says, I'm sorry, Jean, I'm not going to make it. And we see his head explode. Pretty brutal. His visor shattered into a million pieces as Jean screams out, no, they're all gone. So the only one left is Jean in the escape pod. As Beast tells Professor X back in Krakoa, the Sentinel drones have arrived. And so it doesn't take them long to grab the escape pod that Jean is in and bring death to her as well. So the Sentinels, as they're gathering around the escape pod, are talking amongst themselves, saying, look at what the mutants have done, what they've always done. Look at how it always ends with fire and death and funerals of our children. And they pretty much just decimate the escape pod that's left. So every victory is ash. Every triumph is defeat. They've murdered so many of us, the world has grown used to it. This is just how things are for mutants. We see back in the chamber on Earth, the communication chamber in Krakoa, that Charles has fallen down on his knees, and he's thinking to himself, no more. And that's the quote we had at the beginning of the issue, as a tear rolls down his face. He has lost, you know, some of his favorite students, you know, some of his children. And we turn the page, we get a blank page with just in black bold type in the middle, no more. So it's pretty powerful that, you know, these are big names that have died. Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Jean Grey, Cyclops. I mean, they gave their all to prevent the mother mold from coming online to save mutants. But the thing that is even more important than that, in my mind, is the fact that they saved humans too, because the mother mold would have wiped out everybody. The mother mold found both mutants and humans wanting, despite the arrogance of Orcus, despite the, you know, callousness of Dr. McGregor in turning on the mother mold and bringing it online because she thought that it might be ready. And really, she didn't stop to think about it at all. She just wanted her revenge. And so not only did these mutants sacrifice themselves for their fellow mutants, they did like they always do, and they sacrificed themselves for the greater good and for humanity as well. After that white page with the no more, we get another page, a text page that is very different from previous text pages we've had in terms of the way it's laid out. It's a double page spread of text pages, but instead of everything being nice and neatly laid out, everything is sort of thrown on there, hodgepodge. And we see all these headlines. Look what they've done, Genosian genocide, and a lot of those other numbers that we saw earlier on the beginning of the issue, they are there as well, but they're thrown in just haphazardly. And it's a very effective tool, like great job by designer Tom Mueller to do this. And there, it's even interspersed with some images from the issue, Wolverine's body falling apart, Archangel dead in Cyclops's arms, Cyclops's visor being blown up, Jean screaming when that happens. And this line of no more, no more, no more echoing over and over again. It's very powerful. Like it's one that I think I hadn't heard anybody talk about this, how well this is done and how impactful it is, because you're taking all those numbers that John Paul and I talked about before in terms of when you see how those numbers, those facts so stark, and realize, you know, you've gone from 17.5 million down to less than 200, and you're confronted with it in black and white. That's powerful stuff. Now you're taking those same numbers and you're just throwing it kind of haphazardly on this page with these images of violence and action that we've seen throughout the issue. Man, have mutants been put through the ringer. They have not gotten their fair shake, man. They've gotten a raw deal, and you cannot blame them for any of the extremism that they've done. And to John Paul's point earlier, you could even say in fairness to them, they could even go farther. And we turn the page, and the last page says no more once again. And it's a negative image. So the page itself is black instead of white. And the no more text is white instead of black. And superimposed behind it is that image of Professor X with the tear rolling down his cheek. So it's really powerful. And it's clear that the battle lines have been drawn. Mutants are going to do whatever they have to do to ensure the survival of their species. And in ensuring the survival of their species by destroying the mother mold, they actually ensured the survival of the human race as well. So last page is just the reading order. Next time we're going to be doing Powers of 10, number 4. But this was a super powerful story, super powerful events and big deaths. And now here's where we get into the spoilers. And go ahead and turn the pot. Like, if you don't know anything about House of X, Powers of 10, any of the current stuff that's going on, anything beyond this, if you're just listening to these for the first time, maybe reading them along with us for the first time, we're not going to talk about anything more that you need to hear about. And you should probably shut the podcast on now, because now, you know, as much as we're spoiling each issue, we're going to spoil some stuff that I am aware of tangentially, and John Paul knows because he's read it. So if you don't want it to be spoiled, you should shut the podcast off now. Okay, you're gone? All right, good. So I know, and I don't even remember how it got spoiled for me or where I heard from it. And I'm not mad about it. I don't, you know, it's my own fault for not reading the stuff, and it comes with a grain of salt. There's so many comics that I want to read, and I don't get to read all the stuff I want to read when it comes out. So I take that as it is, and I live in the world of comics, and I follow comic people on Twitter, and comic fans reach out to me and ask me questions and all that kind of stuff. So I know if I don't read things in a timely fashion that things get spoiled for me, and I just take that as reality, and I don't blame anybody or get mad about it. So at some point I read something or saw something and found out that all these characters come back, right? They didn't really die. And I do have to think, like, right after I read this issue, I was thinking, okay, if I'd read this in real time, would I really have believed that Marvel would have let Hickman kill Wolverine and Cyclops and Jean and Nightcrawler and Archangel and everybody for good? No. Of course not. We know that these characters, these intellectual property is too valuable for Marvel to let anybody kill them off forever. So, you know, immediately they die and you start wondering, okay, well, how's Marvel going to bring them back this time? I mean, Wolverine's already been dead. So has Cyclops, for that matter. So has Jean Grey, for that matter. So you have to know they're going to come back. But maybe you don't realize how it's going to have to do with Krakoa and mutants are able to be reborn or regrown or something like that. And I don't know exactly all the details because I haven't read it. But I do know that that's a thing. So this happened, and that's immediately where my mind went, okay, they're going to be regrown on Krakoa or something. And it harkened back to some of the things that Magneto said at the beginning of issue 3 of House of X, where He said, you know, if you're not forgotten, you're not really dead. So are they regrown through memories, or Krakoa has some kind of, you know, download of their memories of who they are or something like that. But I have a feeling they're going to be coming back pretty soon. So I know that to be the case. And again, it was kind of spoiled for me, and that's fine. But what I want to ask you, John Paul, is you weren't aware of that at the time, because nobody was aware of that at the time this issue came out. So when you saw all these major X-Men characters die, what were your thoughts in terms of, like, are they gone for good? Are they going to come back? Like, what were you thinking?
This was the most impactful single issue of X-Men I had read in a very long time. And so much so that, I'm going to be honest, I shed a tear, like, because two of my favorite characters had a very emotional death. They might be like my two most favorite X-Men, Wolverine and Nightcrawler. Mm. And to see them go down like that, it was intense.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I didn't think they were dead permanently, because like outside of the actual story, I'm like, you don't kill Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Cyclops, Jean Grey for good. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's common.
But like this, I was like, how are they going to do it? I was like, I just didn't, it was like you had said, they had just come back. A lot of these characters had just come back in the last 2 years. So I was curious to how they're going to fix it.
Yeah, and that, again, it goes to me not reading them in a timely fashion. I missed out on that kind of experience because, like, yeah, I have to imagine it was like a holy crap moment. Like, man, I mean, because it was impactful for me, and I know that that resurrection is a big theme in Hickman's X-Men, that nobody's really gone for good. And even knowing that, I was still like, oh my God, like these guys got wiped out, and it doesn't in any way. You know, the fact that they can come back, I don't even know if they know it at this point. I mean, obviously we'll get there. But regardless, no matter any of that, like throw all that out the window, it doesn't diminish the sacrifice that they make, not only for their, and I keep going back to this, and I'll keep beating on it like it's a dead horse. It does not diminish the fact that they sacrifice themselves, not only for mutants, but also for humans. The mother mold would have wiped out everybody. So they're heroes. I don't care any way you slice it. And yeah, great. I have to think that Hickman, this was probably this part of the story was something that he probably had like set out pretty early on and probably built a lot of the other things around it. Cause events like this, when you do a comic like this and you have it play out as perfectly as he did with all the emotional impact and action and, you know, paced perfectly like he did. This is something that he must have been working on for a long time to get this exactly right. So I bet this was something he had in his back pocket pretty early. So not that I've heard him talk about it, or that's the other part about not reading these right when they come out. I don't get a chance to, I don't go out of my way looking for reviews because I don't go out of my way to spoil things for myself. But Hickman doesn't give a lot of interviews anyway, so. But I'll put it on my list of things to ask him if I ever have him on the show. Maybe I'll run.
I would love for you to have him on your show. I've only heard one interview since Hoxbox from him, and that was with what was that? Behind the Panel, I think it was.
Oh yeah, Mike Avila. Hickman, he doesn't like to do a lot of.
Oh, I'm sorry. Off panel.
Okay. David Harper.
Yes, that's him.
Yeah. Hickman, he just doesn't do a lot of comics press. And the only reason that I even would, and again, so none of this, the last time I saw Hickman, the only time I've ever met him was at a karaoke bar in San Diego at San Diego Comic Con. So the condo that we usually stay at downstairs on the first floor is a restaurant / bar that does karaoke, and a lot of the creators go and hang out there late night. And that was the same time I met CB Cebulski, actually. Him and Hickman were hanging out, and I went over and introduced myself and talked to him for a little bit. But that was before any of this had come out. This was, I guess it must have been San Diego 2019 right? Because this stuff came out, started coming out right after San Diego Comic-Con in 2019. I think it was 2019. Maybe it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
2019. No, it was 2019.
Yeah.
Like these issues dropped right after San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because I remember at the Marvel booth, they were giving out that preview that had like 10 pages of Powers of 10, 1, 10 pages of House of X, 1. So yeah, I think it was that same. I think it might have been the first issue of House of X may even have been in July, either last week of July or first week of August. But anyway, that was the only time that I ever had a chance to meet him. And obviously this stuff hadn't come out. So I didn't know how, you know, big it was going to be. I do remember going to the Marvel panel that Hickman was on and Cebulski was there and Jordan White. And that was when they announced all the titles that were coming later. You know, the Marauders and X-Force and, you know, all that, and who's going to be on which particular team. But yeah, he doesn't do a lot of press. So he's definitely on my bucket list though. I'd love to have him on. But who knows? I mean, I know he doesn't like to do, and I think he doesn't really like the whole idea of spoilers, and he's kind of old school when it comes to that. Like, he doesn't even like solicits, and, you know, he wants things to be like they were back in the 70s, where back in the day where nobody has any.
You know what?
I'm
glad that he's that way, because a lot of the solicits for these issues were not spoiled. I think I remember seeing like Classified on them, and I was so thankful for that, because it would have ruined it for me, at least. I don't like spoilers. I just read a solicit a couple of days ago that spoiled something for me, and I was pissed. Yeah. I was like, oh my goodness, I shouldn't even read that. So.
Yeah, I go both ways. The biggest part of it for me is just, and I've talked about this a ton of times on the podcast, is the fact that you solicit stuff to have people order it 2 months ahead of time before it's even made. So, you know, no other industry does that. Why are you doing, like, yeah, I kind of agree. Like, in my mind, this is what should be in a solicit. Tell me who the creative team is and show me all the covers. That's it. That's all that should be. There should not be anything else in my mind, you know? If it's some kind of a double-sized issue, or, you know, the end of an arc, maybe you can put, you know, whatever the name of the story arc is, you know, whatever, Mount Everest Part 1, Mount Everest Part 6, end of arc, Mount Everest Part 1, new arc, whatever, you know, if you want to talk about that, you could do that kind of thing. But anything that talks about the story, in my mind, because, I mean, you're right, like back in the day, especially before comic shops, when everything was newsstand, you didn't have any idea what was going to happen. But I get it. Things are different now, and you want, well, you know, the readership is numbers are down, even though comics sales have been doing okay. You know, you do have a decline in readership, certainly over the last, you know, 3 or 4 decades compared to what it used to be. So you're trying to drum up excitement. Comic solicits are part of the marketing now, and I get that. But do it. You could do it differently. You don't have to put any of that stuff in the solicits. And if you just want to promote a single issue, then you do that through the comic websites. You know, I won't call them news websites because they're not really news websites anymore. But, you know, if you have Mount Everest 6 features the death of a major character, then put it out through social media, you know. And if people don't want to be spoiled, they can still look at the solicits and order the books they want, and they can stay away. And okay, I know I got to stay away from Bleeding Cool or CBR or Newsarama, and I know I'm not going to be spoiled. So there's different ways that you can do it, but I agree. All that being said, I'd still love to have Hickman on, and not to talk about any future stuff. I would be happy to tell him, okay, Jonathan, we're going to have you on, and we won't talk about anything that hasn't been released, you know, like that's older than a month. I'd even do that. Like, not even like if we had him on, and I wouldn't even talk about something that happened the previous week, because I know he wants to give people a chance to read it. I'd have him on just to talk about these. These have been out for over a year now. Hey, come on the show and just talk about House of X and Powers of X. And that's it. Cause there's so much that I would love to pick his brain about. So we'll see. I mean, he doesn't even really like to do conventions. I mean, the only reason he was at San Diego in 2019 is because this obviously was the biggest X-Men thing in years, if not a decade. So I think that Marvel was like, you need to come and, you know, help us promote it. So it's the only time I've ever seen him at a show or heard of him being at a show. So, but you can guarantee next time I'll be like, all right, Jonathan, let's go sing a karaoke song together. And then we'll sit down and chat about House of X Powers of 10. See if I can make that happen. So someday.
Yeah. Butter him up. Butter him up real good.
Yeah. Hey man, House of X number 4, my favorite comic of all time. I don't know that I would go that far, but man, this was a great issue for sure.
Yeah.
So 2 issues left. And without giving too much away, I'll just ask you, speaking of spoilers, this has got to be the climax of this series, right? Like the last 2 issues aren't as impactful. It's just kind of the fallout here.
They're important. Are they as impactful? Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say because there's some new developments that are definitely touchstones for the rest going forward.
That makes sense.
But
not as much action.
I just don't think they have the impact. Yes.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So maybe one more issue has the emotional impact, but and this one was like, for me, the top of it as far as that goes.
Yeah, this one was brutal, man. So anyway, everybody, thanks for joining us as always. Very good chance that next X Tuesday we may cover another 2. And it just goes to show just how great these books are. It's like I'm reading them, you know, in close proximity to when we record these podcasts. And so I still haven't read Powers of 10, 5 or 6. I haven't read House of X 5 or 6, and I want to read them. So part of the reason we covered 3 and 4, yes, they are very closely linked together. But part of the reason we're releasing 2 episodes today is because I didn't want, after reading House of X number 3, I couldn't not read House of X number 4. And then it just made me want to talk about it also. So very well may try to do that again and get you 2 episodes next Tuesday and maybe even 2 X episodes the following Tuesday. So we'll see. Plus, I want to get caught up. I want to read the Ten of Swords stuff. Been hearing good things. And I've also heard some bad things about current X-Men stuff, just to throw one last thought in here. And it's only because the story that Hickman is telling that's so big that you kind of have to read everything. And some people's budget doesn't allow that. And even some of the, I think they're releasing, Marvel's releasing the trades 2 ways. I know they were, I don't know if they still are, but they were releasing it like, okay, here's the first 6 issues of Uncanny X-Men. Here's the first 6 issues of Marauders. And here's the first 6 issues of X-Force. But then they're also releasing it, right? Here's the first issue of you know, these 6 series. Here's the second issue of these 6 series. So you know, kind of in that idea of you need to be reading everything. So, I mean, I know you're still reading a lot of this, right? John Paul, are you picking up all the X-Men stuff?
I'm reading everything except for Excalibur, which, you know, I don't hear like rave reviews about it. I follow other X fans and they're back and forth with that one. Mm-hmm. And I just recently dropped another one. Just because it doesn't quite interest me as much, X-Factor. But all the other ones, I'm pretty much like.
Does it seem like you need to be reading all of them, or was it that more the case when they were like when they started off, and now they're kind of separating themselves?
Well, I kind of figure, especially since Marvel Unlimited now has the 3-month thing instead of 6-month. Mm. It's like, okay, well, in 3 months I could just read it then. Gotcha. And yeah. Instead of having to buy it then. He's like, 'cause I'm not that excited to read it in the first place. So, so that's my new thing. 'Cause you know, comics are not cheap.
No. Yeah, I agree. But yeah. So I think my point is valid, and I get what some people complain about with, hey, I want to get into the X-Men stuff, but the way Hickman has constructed it, there's important things and there's information in every title. So if you want to get the best experience, and you know, comic fans tend to be completists and they want the whole story. And so, you know, Well, so they got to decide. It's either all, I'm going to read all of them at some point, or I'm not going to read any of them. Can't really go kind of halfway. But yeah, if you're one of those people who stopped reading X-Men because of that, I think John Paul's suggestion is a good one. You know, you only have to wait 3 months. Marvel Unlimited is what, like $8.99 a month?
I don't know how much it is monthly, because I get like a yearly subscription.
Gotcha.
So I think it's like $70 a month. I mean, a year.
Year, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's less than $8.99. That's way less if you're getting the whole year. So yeah, that's a great way to do it. And you can read a lot of old stuff, older stuff as well. You can follow along with our Thanos reading order. We're in some classic Silver Surfer right now. So yeah, always a big fan of Marvel Unlimited. So anyway, like I said, that's going to do it for this this episode, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to John Paul for joining, as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.